What's up? Jason Tatum here. Ball up wherever you are with NBA 2K Mobile. Play in-game events to collect NBA legends and rising stars to assemble your dream team and settle things on the court. NBA 2K Mobile lets you put together your dream team with your favorite NBA legends and current GOATs. Download NBA 2K Mobile now on the App Store and Google Play.
Before we get started with this episode of Bench with Bubba, real quickly, had some audio issues with the microphones on this podcast, so I tried to clean up the best I could, but at the end it gets pretty rough. We had to cut things pretty short, so I apologize for that. We'll be back and better than ever next week for another episode of Bubba and the Bat Flip, but I got two more episodes of Bench with Bubba coming this week, so hope you guys enjoy, and here's another episode of Bench with Bubba, episode 367. And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bum on the Bat Flip, episode 82, creeping our way towards triple digits. Slowly but surely, we're getting there. We're going to talk some Week 5 Fab recap, as we like to do. I hope it's useful for you guys. I think it's fun to kind of talk about these players and why they're picked up and what we think of them going forward and maybe some drops, this, that, and the other. So hopefully it's helpful. I think it helps me review things. So I hope it helps you guys. But you can find me on Twitter at BDNTrick and the Bat Flip portion of the podcast on Twitter at BatFlipCrazy. Toby, how we doing, my friend?
Bubba, we're doing great. It's May. I feel like I really start to enjoy the season once May starts, you know, because we have a decent sample to look at from players, but it's decent enough where you can kind of see players who maybe skill-wise are struggling versus guys who are maybe unlucky or lucky, you know, alternatively. And so being able to make some moves based on that, you know, and also starting to see players dropped who maybe shouldn't be dropped, or where people are getting a little bit more impatient. So I think it's a really interesting time in kind of your fantasy roster and the way that it develops and adding key pieces and stuff like that. So I'm a big fan of May and forward. That's what I'm going to tell myself since my teams are struggling a little bit in April. And that's how I'm going to write it. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. It's another wonderful day. Tuesday, it's been in the high 80s, low 90s the last few days, so it is definitely spring is over. That is official. We are into summer in my mind, so that's it's fun, though. I don't mind it. But, yeah, baseball's cranking up. The Giants are still, like, leading me on. It's one of those, like, I told myself going into the season, you know, oh, they'll be okay, whatever. Then they do this, and they're going to lead me on until, like, late August into September, and then it's actually going to hurt. So that's going to be fun. But it's good, and like you said with the fantasy teams, I'm with you there. It's like we said on previous shows, okay, don't panic. At least wait till April's over to kind of see what these guys are doing. You mentioned the sample size. Like, I write DFS 5 days a week, and trying to justify barrel rates and hard hit rates and stuff from such a small sample is tricky. But, like, I started diving into guys like Hunter Dozier the other day because his numbers, peripheral stats look horrible because his X stats and his quality of contact, and the last 3 days he's going off. Like, things are starting to fall again. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that's going to work for everybody, but you can see things like that, which helps as we kind of a bigger sample, as you kind of mentioned. So it'll be fun to see where it goes. Before we get into our Fab recap, I will ask you this much, because you are a very, very good NFBC player and very successful. When do you start to, per se, I know saves is different because saves has just been a landmine this year for everybody, but when do you start panicking on, like, certain stats, like home runs, runs, like, when do you start making it, like, more and more of a focal point in your Fab process to go, I need to attack these specific stats?
Well, I think it's kind of always in my mind, but it also depends on the team that I built and where it's struggling, where the injuries are happening, like what am I losing based on who's off my team? So it's really like kind of a situation by situation case, but I would recommend doing that. Like, if you just lost Luis Robert, realize that, like, you know, you're probably going to have a hole of 20 stolen bases and 20 home runs, which is really hard to fill. but you got to try to come as close as you can to that, you know? And there may not be guys on the wire, but maybe it's that you want to, that there's power guys available now. So you want to focus on power guys. And in the back of your mind, you want to realize that if any speed guys show up on the wire, that you need to be a little bit more aggressive on them to try to compensate. So I really think that each roster is unique. And it also depends on the size of the struggle. Like if you're 15th in a category, like I have one league where, well, I'm 15th in a couple categories, including zero saves. I still have zero saves in one of my main.
That's impressive. Games. Like this far in, that's impressive.
I mean, it's just like one of those things where it's like I have Doolittle in for a week. Nothing happens. So I take him out. The next week he gets his one save of the year. You know, just one of those and just not. Nothing's coming to fruition. I mean, I picked up Michael Gibbons in that league, and like we were talking about before the show, he's thrown in the fifth inning. And so maybe it was a high leverage piece and that's why he was in there. Maybe, you know, maybe Varg still has the job. We don't know. But, you know, like, and in that league, I think I have like 30 home runs and first place has 54. I mean, that's a pretty sizable chunk, right? Of home runs that you need to make up. And so I've got to be thinking in my mind, like, it looks like power is a weak source, weak spot. So looking through my lineup, and then it's like, oh, well, I have McCutcheon. And McCutcheon has one home run before today, and then he hits two today. You know, and so just trying to think about, like, where are guys in relation to where I would anticipate them being, and then do I expect that that's going to continue or not? And so, you know, but you always need to be mindful of what that team is and what your strengths and weaknesses are and make moves accordingly.
Yeah, and I think another part of that is it's like you said, team by team, it's different. And like I tweeted it out. I know you've got some, everybody does, but like I had a roster of like Soto, Teoscar, like all like Starling Marte, all these guys injured. Like my whole bench was injured. And these are all guys I took in like the first seven rounds. Like I'm expecting these guys to produce. So it's like, okay, don't panic too much because they're going to be back soon. And maybe they still get the back of their baseball card for 4 months. And you know, that's going to be probably better than any good guy you're going to pick up on the waiver wire. So that's what you got to kind of hope for too. So I got some teams where I'm sitting back going, okay, I'm like sixth or seventh. I'm trying to tread water here and then hoping things get better before I panic. And there's other leagues, like you said, like, you know, it's just all going bad. And it's like, okay, when do I pull the pin and just blow it up and try to just throw the Hail Mary? Do I do it soon, later? Like we've seen some fab weeks where some people are doing it right out the gate. And it's like, that's not going to be good come later on. So, like, at least for you, you've been very, like, you always are, but you've been kind of, safer is not the right word, more resistant in your fab. Yeah, conservative in your fab bidding. So all these guys are going to be out of money when there's going to be more saves guys that show up. There's going to be guys that come up, and you're going to have the hammer to do whatever you want to maybe help you somewhere. You might not win saves by the end, but you might go from 15th to, like, 8th, which could be a game changer in the grand scheme of things. So I think it's like the mindset has to change, which isn't easy when you just go look at standings and it's just like, ugh, like this isn't fun, but I guess you got to kind of have the grain of salt look to things right now and hope it gets better. But I'm not at the point of like, that's why I asked you the question. Cause I'm not at the point of let's like start really attacking certain things, but I do look at it each week. Like where are my weakest, I guess if I'm picking between like four guys I'm bidding on, I might put a few extra bucks on a certain category guy. Cause I know I need him type stuff. So, yeah, just thought it'd be an interesting discussion because FAB's kind of wild and we're hitting May, like you said. So,
yeah, well, and I think you make a good point there, too. And one of the things that I'm thinking about in that league where I don't have any saves is I don't want to be it's a balance because I don't want to be wasting reliever. I don't want to be wasting pitcher slots on relievers that aren't going to get me, you know, K's and wins, you know, and innings and volume. You know, and so right now I think in that lineup, I have 9 starting pitchers in right now. I'm fortunate enough. I could actually look and tell you exactly. But, and the reason is because I know down the stretch, I'm going to be needing to look for saves and I'm going to need to be overcompensating later on. So yeah, I have Giolito, Woodruff, Alcantara, Ray, Means, Bumgarner, Peterson, Yarborough, and Gibbons are in right now. So those are the, I have 8 starters and then I have Gibbons hoping that he, you know, somehow finds a way to get me a save.
They got him back out here for the 6th. They're
do usually, they? Well, yeah, maybe he'll get the win then, but.
Yeah, it'll be a Giants loss, but I'll let you have it.
Okay. Cool. Well, I appreciate it.
Yeah. But yeah, so no, it's just, I think we'll have some discussions like this once in a while. I'm just kind of pick each other's brain for a bit to let the listeners know, like, kind of how we think of things without, since they're not asking, this is not a slight on the listeners, but the questions from preseason to in season have dropped tremendously. So I'll start throwing stuff out there for you guys to kind of have some fun with it. But otherwise, we'll just keep talking off air and having fun like we always do. But
for sure. Or we'll start asking like ourselves questions, but not about fantasy baseball, just like existential questions. Like,
when was the last time you actually had your Reese's S'mores? Like, come on. When did this happen?
You want to know what I did? The last time I had a s'more, I did not share this because it was disgusting. But I had I made a Cadbury cream egg s'more.
Oh, I love so you said it was disgusting though? Too rich?
Well, yeah, I'm not a Cadbury cream egg fan.
I love Cadbury. They're rich.
They're very rich. And I made one just because I was like, why not?
Why not? Yeah, you got to try it.
You got it. I wouldn't recommend it, but if you like Cadbury cream eggs, it probably tastes delicious.
I might have to try it, but I even myself, like, I'll get the 4-pack or whatever. I can only have like one at a time. Like, I'm not going down on, like, it's literally like I'll have one a night for like 4 nights as like an after dinner dessert. So
we're not in our youth anymore, Bubba.
No, because back in college, I could just sit there and it didn't matter. So yeah, things have changed quite a bit, but let's get into some fab. Let's talk about the main man we were talking about before the show, because you rostered him in a few places and he is dealing in Anaheim tonight. Shane McClanahan, he was picked up in 430 leagues. I'm using all leagues fab on the NFBC. So 430 leagues. He has picked up max of 331. Again, low of $1, which always, what league is that? Because I'd love to be there. That'd be fun. But McClanahan's awesome. He's as advertised so far. Like, I knew it coming into it, he was very good. I just didn't know how the Rays were going to take care of him type thing. But so far through two starts, I know he's still – I think he's still in. I don't know. We were talking about he's close on the border.
Let's check.
We didn't know if he's going to get to go through, you know, the 5 to 6 innings or not. But he's been outstanding. Absolutely outstanding. And the fastball is legit. Go back and look at I know a lot of people have done like GIFs and everything. They took him out.
Luis Patino is gonna
back him up. That's what they did the first time too. So that'll be interesting to see if they keep doing that to kind of – I think they might do it because, A, it's the Rays, and, B, if they do this every time out, they can use them all the way till the end of the season. Otherwise, they won't. But I recommend anybody go check out Alex Fast and look – it's probably like 5 days ago, but – he was tweeting out videos and layovers of his pitches, and there's one where literally he throws two pitches that go different directions. It was the most ridiculous stuff I've ever seen. So with all that being said, you can tell I really like Shane McClanahan. I didn't get him in nearly as many places as I want, and this is the first like aggressive bids I've made all season. We've talked pretty much how kind of conservative we've been. I was aggressive on him, and it didn't matter. Like, people were way more aggressive than me, which makes me wonder, there ain't many people with money left if this is the way it's going. So you, I think, got McClanahan in a few spots. So what's your thoughts on him?
I did. I got him in a number of spots, including my two biggest leagues. So let's hope he does well. I'm really sad that he's not going to go in for the win here. But I'll take 4 innings, 5 Ks, you know, and a 1 whip for him. Yeah, you know, I was convinced a little bit. I mean, number one, the stuff is kind of outrageously good. You know, you can see that visually, you can see it in some of the skills. You know, he had a 23% swing strike rate his first outing. Obviously hitters need to adjust, but you know, Eno was putting out there on Twitter as well, just his stuff metric is, you know, that Eno puts out, as was like 137.5, which was the best for any starting pitcher, would have been the best for any starting pitcher. And so you knew his stuff was really good. You knew the velo was really high. And so the velo is going to play, especially from the left side. You know, that's just not something that hitters are going to be used to seeing. And then to top it off, the projections really like him. I mean, the bat has him at a 3.49 ERA, a 1.21 whip, 106 strikeouts in 89 innings. Steamer has him at 3.46, 1.22 whip, 91 strikeouts, 74 innings pitched. So, I mean, if you, from every kind of angle you look at it, he was kind of checking all the boxes for a decent sized bid. I think I got him slightly above 200 in one league and like around 150 to 175 in a couple of my other leagues as well. And so I really like that about him. I think the major question is usage, right? I mean, I'm learning about this today, right? He threw 63 pitches. He threw 59 last week. And so we thought maybe he might get another inning to stretch himself out a little bit, but it could be that they just have the piggyback, right? They just have him with Patino afterward or whatever. I know on the Launch Angle podcast, Rob Silver was mentioning that, just how You know, nobody's really been that interested in Patino yet, even though he seems to have this role potentially. And now we're seeing this happen
all
again.
The wins.
Yeah, we're seeing this happen again. I mean, just vulture.
It's like Ryan Yarbrough from a few years ago.
Totally. Patino's new nickname is going to be the Vulture.
Yeah. He's like the touchdown vultures, Jerome Bettis of fantasy baseball.
Unbelievable. So I think the usage and how long they're going to keep him in there is the major question. But really, like, I mean, even if he hits his projection, right, if he throws 90 innings the rest of the season with those level of ratios and more than a strikeout an inning, that's going to be really, really helpful given where pitching is at today. And even though offense is down, we know that, like, I mean, come summer, it's going to be dangerous out there. So, yeah, I really liked him. I got him. I was aggressive. I felt like he was maybe a potential difference maker. And we'll see what happens.
Yeah, the Wiz thing is going to be concerning because I figured they'd start stretching. Like we were talking about before the show. It's like, okay, 59, let him go 5. Maybe he'll go 6, like start normal progression. But maybe they just want to like ride him out so he can pitch all the way through September. We'll have to see how that goes. Patino could be interesting. It'd be nice if they pitched Patino the first inning or two, then let McClanahan go. That would be fun. But it looks like that's not their point of action right now. So let's keep an eye on that. He's going to be phenomenal, like you said, the ratios, strikeouts. But we'd like to get some wins out of him. That because basically, if he's not getting the wins, it's like, do you want Kopech or do you want McClanahan? Like, Kopech's not going to start the whole time. He's going to spot start. But he's going to basically be this 3-4 inning guy. TJ Anton, stuff like that. It's going to be very similar roles. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
For sure.
All right, the catcher's position has been just wiped out with injuries this last week. Like I tweeted out, I got Mike Zunino for $1. Like I'm taking guys I never thought I'd take. Zunino's hitting well, I'll give him that much, but I don't believe it's going to sustain. I'm very clear on Zunino. But Kyle Higashioka is a guy that I've played for DFS the last 2 years as he gets roles because he was Cole's personal catcher, and we're already seeing what he's doing with his other pitchers because his defense is great. Gary Sanchez, not so much. And Higashioka is actually hitting decently. Got picked up in 298 leagues, as high as 222, as low as $1. 222 is just insane to me, absolutely ridiculous to me. Like I don't want to be mean, but that's just nuts. He's like a 60-40 split at best, and he's a catcher. But if you want to throw like 40 or 50 bucks out because you're desperate, sure. But 222 is nuts. I think he's good, but Toby, I just can't do that. I'm sorry. If you're listening and you put 222, I apologize, but I'd love to know why.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's fine.
Yeah.
I think he's generally fine. Like he's a good catcher too, but I don't necessarily think he ends up being a difference maker, especially, you know, we're dealing the last couple years with very small sample, you know, just of him generally, right? Like over the last, I mean, before last year, he was never on anybody's radar.
Yep.
We've had 88 plate appearances for Higashioka, and you know we've got very high home run to fly ball rates. Whether he'll be able to sustain those, I'm not quite sure. The BABIP is low, but his career BABIP is 212 over 244 plate appearances because I don't think he legs out a lot of ground balls. His contact rate is down significantly this year. You know, and that hasn't necessarily shown up yet in the strikeout rate. So I think there's some areas of regression right here, but you know, we had a lot of catcher injuries over this last week. And so I think he's fine to add. I just, again, wouldn't, like you mentioned before, I wouldn't break the bank to get him because I'm not sure it's sustainable. And, you know, and I don't think he's a difference maker over the course, especially of a long season.
Like one little bit of advice, and I'm still trying to be better at FAB because there's guys way better at FAB than me. Like there's weeks I just get blown away by what took place, even on my own bids. But like, look at Dom Nunez. I think he is potentially a kind of a different maker just because he's in Coors, his power, he's playing, he's going to play more than Higgy. Well, I just call him Higgy. It's just easier for me. But so I think those are players, but where I'm going with that is like over the last 3 weeks, you've seen Nunez kind of picked up here and there. Go look back and see how much he went for. I don't think he went for over 200 bucks anywhere I saw. So Higgy should not be going more than 200 bucks. Just look for similar players. And then obviously you might have to go more certain times, but at least it gives you a ballpark on where you should be bidding for things. And as the season goes on and people have less money, the bids should probably become a little cheaper. So something you should also keep in mind as you're going, because you're going to need a lot of that money you spent on Higgy later on. That's going to sting a little bit. All right, this one's interesting to me because I see the appeal for the first three games in Coors, but man, Yaz is back on Friday and they're going to get more guys. So Mike Tauchman got picked up in 273 leagues, as high as 312, as low as a dollar. I put some bids out for him for like 30 or 40 bucks, did not get him anywhere because I'm a Giants fan and I love Tauchman and he's already played great in the doubleheader in Coors. But I'm also a realist that they have too many outfielders and they're platooning the crap out of them. It's a strong side of the platoon, which is great. But what's your thoughts on Tauchman, who I like? There's power speed, but playing time is a massive concern to me.
Yeah, I think it depends. I mean, like the one place where I got him and I put in a pretty hefty bid actually was in our league together, in Barf, just because it's an OBP league.
That's different. I will give you that.
Yeah, and so it's slightly different, but. You know, when you look at Tauchman over the course of a full, you know, his career in the major leagues, 509 plate appearances, 252 batting average, 14 home runs, 16 stolen bases, 74 runs and 68 RBI. I mean, that's a very valuable profile in 15-team leagues and deeper leagues. You know, obviously, depending on the bid amount that you put in, though, like you mentioned, the playing time is going to be a major question. Like, you know, he faces all three righties, you know, in Coors, which is great, but once the lefties start coming in, you know, he's going to start sitting then. And like you mentioned, Tauchman's going to come back and they're missing a ton of bats. And I still think that Tauchman will get a decent amount of run against right-handed hitters because I do think that he's one of the better outfielders that they do have, but it's just going to be a little bit tricky. And the challenge with it becomes, again, like if you have, let's say you're an NFBC and you have seven roster spots, you're going to have him in there. And with so much uncertainty and rotations heading into like just days and weeks, it's like how confidently can you say, oh, well, in these four games that the Giants have, you know, three of them are going to be against righties. Or, you know, if it's only three games in that first half of the week, like if two of the three are against right-handers, do you still put him in there? So it just creates all types of like internal challenges with matching your roster and with the dynamic nature of like lineups and pitching today, you just need to be flexible and his profile doesn't necessarily allow that for you. That said, I mean, if he falls into playing time, he could definitely be a difference maker, right? He's a potential 20-20 guy over the course of a full season. So if you missed out on, if you lost Robert or, you know, something like that, you know, you can kind of put him in there. But again, the playing time is going to be the key to how, whether he reaches that value or not.
And there will be a couple of things I'll say about him because the 2020 thing is what appeals to me as well. Like that's legit there. In NFBC, it's kind of something you're talking about there. It's like, okay, maybe he gets three righties early in the week. You play him there, you bench him on the weekend. It just stinks because you're trying to use like multi-position guys to kind of be doing that kind of math. It's just an outfielder, so it makes it tougher, especially if you have injuries. But if like, hey, if you're one of those lucky people and you can roster guys, then he's perfect for you. The other thing I will say is the Giants somehow always fall on the banana peel. Some guys always hurt. So that's like – it's like the old baseball HQ method, Ron Chandler, draft skills, not roll, and hope it sticks because the skills are there. The other thing I'll say with the Giants, if somehow they fall out of contention, or even if they're still in contention, I could see Farhan doing it. He's going to trade whoever he can trade and keep rebuilding this thing. And that could free up a second half of playing time for Tauchman. So I like there's certain guys where I'm just like, no, you shouldn't pay that money. I get the Tauchman buy at least. I didn't bid that much. I didn't get him, but I see where he's at because his skill level compared to some other guys we talked about, like there's Tyron Taylor and stuff, who guys are taken from Milwaukee. Good young kid, but we haven't really seen him much. Tauchman, we know what he's going to do. Like there's a big difference there. We know what he should do, I should say. So that's a big difference with him. So I can definitely see the appeal on that one. All right. The
next one here, interesting with Yelich going down again.
Yeah, that's. I think it's serious too because he was out for so long. He played one game, and now he's back on the IL. Not even just like a day or two off to see how he feels. Like straight to the IL. That's just like that's not good. That's like not good at all. So that sucks. We go from one Alex Chamberlain player to another. The irony behind all this because Chamberlain probably drafted these guys. I don't know if he still rostered them, but he probably had them both on his roster at one point. Josh Rojas. Went in 245 leagues, as high as 254, as low as one. I know I even got him in a league or two. I think more like 12-man leagues, some satellite leagues or something. Didn't get him in any 15s, I don't believe, but he's already gone deep once this week. He is hitting the baseball very well in this like second chance he's had to start. He had the chance earlier, kind of went to the bench. He's back with all these injuries in Arizona. Ketel Marte is coming back soon. Keep an eye on that. Christian Walker did just come back. So they're starting to get healthier. But Rojas is kind of forcing that angle with Calhoun out to maybe play. You mentioned Tauchman 2020. I'm not saying Rojas is 2020, but similar kind of idea, I think.
Yeah, I mean, definitely, definitely a solid player. I mean, the plate discipline is elite. Borderline elite. I mean, 25.7% O swing over the course of his career, 304 plate appearances. You know, yeah, he's kind of more like maybe a 15-15 guy, but super useful second base, shortstop, outfield. I don't think he was available in any of my leagues or many of my leagues. But yeah, I mean, he's solid, and I think he's another guy. You kind of run him out there while he gets there, and you don't necessarily feel awful about dropping him if team gets healthy a little bit. The same token, kind of what you said about the Giants. I mean, this is the year for them to find out what they have in him. And he's playing all over. He's playing, I think he was right field today. You know, he's got second base shortstop eligibility. So, you know, move him around, see what he can do and see what you've got. He could definitely be helpful, especially if you're playing him on matchups and trying to take advantage of that type of stuff. So,
yeah, basically over the last 2 weeks, he's kind of started playing every day again. He's striking out 30% of the time. That's not ideal. But I just did like his game logs. He's hitting 378 with a 405 ISO and a 218 WRC plus. He's got four home runs over that stretch. Like, he is doing everything we thought he could do. Well, not probably more. But the part that really stands out over that like 2 week stretch, a 16% barrel rate and a 60% hard hit rate. And I'm still talking about Josh Rojas. Like, that is like Alex Chamberlain must be just like running around. I don't want to say naked, but we've seen him shirtless. So he's probably doing
something.
He's probably doing something for sure in Hawaii and just loving life, picking coconuts or something. So it's a tough life over there.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that concerns me a little bit about him, his max exit velocity the last 2 years is 104.2.
That's out of the last 2 weeks too.
Which is kind of, which is like Kevin Biggio territory, although it really hasn't seemed to stop him from hitting home runs the way it has for, I think it has for Biggio. I haven't paid much attention to him because I don't have him, but
he's not doing anything.
Yeah, the one thing that I would say contact wise about him is the K rate is up, but the contact rate is also up as well. So I would think that if he's able to maintain those skills, that some positive regressions do his ways there. So again, some good things. You know, I think overall, like a very solid profile, like across the board.
Would you rather have Josh Rojas or Mike Tauchman?
That's a good question.
I think Rojas has a better path to playing.
I think Rojas too. I think he went in most of my leagues 2 weeks ago, though.
Yeah, he was.
Because I had bids in for Tauchman, but not Rojas.
Yeah.
And I think the thing with Rojas, yeah, the multi-position is really big for him. You know, I think he's younger, so there's more of a need to kind of see what they have in him. That's what I'd go with.
Yeah, I'm on Rojas too. I love Tauchman, but man, just if we said Tauchman was playing every day, now we're talking, because the Giants have been batting him first or second. Like, they're not burying him in the order. It's very attractive if he plays every day. But yeah, Rojas for me as well. We'll stay in the desert here. Dalton Varsho got called back up with the Calhoun injury. He's basically been a pinch hitter. Somehow went for as high as 237, as low as a dollar. I know the catcher appeal we talked about. He's just not playing, Toby. So I didn't even bother putting a bid in for him.
Yeah, I wasn't really after him either. I mean, it's depressing. But you know, the thing is, I think back at my early draft champions and some of the guys I targeted, right? Those Varshos, Varsho and Leody Taveras and Andres Jimenez, and God, what a mistake those guys have been. And it's just like in the off season, it seems so hopeful, but it's kind of like what Jeff Zimmerman says, like players who have not shown that they're good, you know, and again, it could be just confirmation bias here, you know, but like players who are not that good, like with Jimenez, we didn't even think about, I didn't even think about him getting platooned, you know?
Yeah.
And with Varsho, it's like, he wasn't good when he came up, you know, and the projections had him as being a good player, but at that point in the draft, it's just not worth it. So anyways, that's not to answer on Varsho. I mean, Varsho is, is Varsho, and I agree with you, the playing time is going to be really difficult, and Carson Kelly is mashing, and so he's really looking at outfield spots. And then you got Rojas, you got Pavin Smith, who we talked about last week, and really like him a lot. So there's just, and then you have Peralta. So there's just not a lot of room for him to get regular at bats. And I think it's hard to see a ton of value with that being the case.
Yeah, maybe he proves me wrong. I just pulled up his log since he got called up. He's started the last two games. He's hit safely in both games. In the outfield, though, so like I said, when Ketel Marte comes back and everything, it makes things a little more difficult there. But hey, maybe he runs into some playing time and gets hot, but it's a very, very small sample right now. So we'll have to see there, because, yeah, like you said, he's kind of disappointed in his previous chance to make this work. All right, a fun one here. A lot of people picked up Nick Pivetta for the two-star week, especially with Detroit in town. He threw five innings. I believe got eight strikeouts, so not too bad. He had three runs, I believe, two or three runs. I got picked up in 197 leagues. 121 max, one min. Okay, I can kind of see it. I still don't know if I would have put 121, but I get it. The matchups and all. We've seen how streaming goes. I got him in a couple 12 teamers. Were you interested in Pivetta this week?
Not really. I had him off and on a couple of teams earlier on this year, and I just can't get there with him. He's done all right so far, but he has a .233 BABIP. Against when his career is .319. That's always been an issue for him. His velocity is up a little bit, but it's actually not higher than it was back in 2019 or 2018, you know, back when he was actually pitching and a starter. The skills don't jump off the page. A 7.7% K minus walk, swinging strike rate at 10.5%. He's not generating any chases on pitches outside the zone, 24.6%, around 30 to 31% is league average. So the walk issues are legit. They're real based on what he's been doing so far. And I want to steer clear of that, because he's going to have a game where he has a Herman Marquez type game. By the way, what's the deal with Marquez and the Giants?
A juggernaut offense, I guess. I don't know. I'm just kidding.
I mean, massive blowups at Coors
Giants,
where he hasn't exited the first inning, have both been the Giants.
The Giants love Coors. Like, I know people don't like talking about BVP, batter versus pitcher numbers, but there's a ton of experience. Like some samples are super small, they're silly, but you go to daily baseball data, that's where I go for it. There's other places. And you look at, like, most of this Giants lineup, especially the older guys, they have feasted on Marquez. There's just something they see about him, and a lot of those numbers are in Coors Field. It's just what they do. So, like, I had no intentions of ever playing Marquez. Like, we talked a lot about him in the preseason, where I said, where he's getting drafted, it's the old story. Like, you know, if you have a guy and you can't start him for two starts, why keep him? Well, Colorado's a little different animal. And I said, where you're drafting him now, you're not paying a premium. So you can sit him on leagues like this, and it doesn't break my heart anymore. I know it's, people might say it's Captain Hindsight, but I would not have started him this week. Like, the only reason why we talked about me starting Austin Gomber, actually both of us starting Austin Gomber last week, was because he's on the road. Like, it's just, you don't do it in Coors Field. Never Coors Field.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
It's rough.
Yeah. Like, a lot of people tweeted it, and I wish it would happen. It's just trade Marquez to somewhere where he can actually thrive. That'd be so much fun. But we'll see. The Rockies have new ownership, but they're already making weird decisions. We don't need to talk about Nico Hornery. Went 190 leagues, as high as 300, as low as one. He's now on the IL, so that's a bummer. But I am a big Nico Hornery believer. Talked about him a lot last week. I'd still hold out hope there. It shouldn't be a long IL stint. But one I wanted to ask you about, Tyler O'Neill, picked up in 168 leagues, as high as 217, as low as one. He has been pretty much on fire since he's been back from injury, hitting the ball hard. He's shown some power and speed, but very productive. It is kind of a crowded outfield, but it looks like they're going to give O'Neill some pretty decent run here. Did you have any interest in Tyler O'Neill?
He was not available in most of my leagues, but not really. I mean, I'm not seeing a different player, honestly. He's got a .269 batting average, you know, .333 BABIP. His career is .309. So he's playing a little bit maybe above where he normally would. Home run per fly ball rate is 31.3%. He is going to have higher than league average just because of the power, but 31.3% I don't believe is going to hold. And then he has the same issues he's always had: 36% O swing, 65% contact rate, you know, just not good. you know, the Statcast data as usual is pretty strong for him, but the question is really sustainability. And so I think he's a guy like, you know, you put him in the lineup, he's getting you a little bit of speed, a little bit of pop. You know, if you, again, if you lose out on Louis Robert, it's like a somewhat similar profile that you can maybe replace him with. I don't think the batting average will be all that good. I'm not that interested in him for the long term, but if you want to run him out in short term, or like they have seven games, or they had seven games before the rainout tonight, you know, if you want to run him out there, then that's great. But I don't think sustainably, I don't think it's going to be over the course of a full season. I don't think he's going to be a huge help, because I think that batting average is going to get.
Yeah, I grabbed him at, I think, 112. So that's my only share, but he's impressed me a bit since he's returned. It's been about 2 weeks since he's been back. His O swing is down to 27% against super small sample. I'll admit that, but his O swing's better. His overall contact's up to like almost 79%, which if he continues, that would be outstanding. Who knows if it actually stays that way. Striking out 22% of the time, BABIP's up to 385. So maybe things have changed. Super, super small sample, but
absolutely.
So we'll wait and see there. It could be quite interesting.
If he is able to make, that's a game changer, right? And that's what you're hoping for. So
we'll have to wait and see. It'll be interesting to see how it all plays out there, but let's talk about some more players here. We got Michael Givens, 145 and 140 leagues, 121 max, one min. I guess we can talk about Michael Givens if you want to talk about him.
Michael Givens in the fifth and sixth inning. Saves. I should have told people ahead of time, just so you knew. Today, he had looked really good. This world, but he'd really cut down on the walk rate. He was getting ahead of, you know, so, and decent in zone. BABIP is low, but he's high. The strand weight was super high, so we were for saves. And so the assumption was that given Daniel Givens might get the next save opportunity. Case, then, you know, again, he's not a guy skill wise that you're targeting, right? Charts. There were years where the skills were really good, but this isn't that guy. And so from him.
Your mic's going in and out right now. Can you check your connection real quick?
Yeah, is that
now you're going in and out. Like you'll talk for like 2 seconds and it'll go out for like 2 seconds. You keep going back and forth.
That is that better?
Yeah, we'll keep with that for
it
now.
It is better.
Yeah, no, you're good. You sound fine when it's on. It's just kind of going, like, it'd be quiet and then go, quiet and go. So okay. We'll see how it keeps going. No, it's because it was Michael Givens we were talking about. That's what it was. But now you're quiet again.
Emotional journey I've been on over the last few days with him.
There you go. All right, let's talk about the next one here. Carlos Martinez got picked up in a lot of leagues. Garrett Richards. Let's kind of group some of these together. Martinez, Richards, Albert Azalea, Mad Bum. Four pitchers that we've seen some good signs of life from of late. I know you mentioned earlier when we talked before the show, you have Mad Bum going in a roster. I actually put some small bids in on him, going to be honest. I was intrigued if the price was right. Alzolay's there. I didn't put any bids on Richards and not on Carmart either. Are you interested in any of those four guys? Yeah, your mic's busting out again.
It's busting out again. All right. Yeah. Well, I wonder if I just...
Nope.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That's
all right. Right. Let's give it a try.
We'll give it a try. Sorry for the technical difficulties, folks.
No problem.
I'm gonna talk. I'm gonna make out with the mic right here. I'm gonna get real close, real loud. So I think with of those four you mentioned, I think you know, Mad Bum is actually super interesting to me. I picked him up last week. I started him this past week. You know, he had a really nice matchup last week against the Marlins. This week, I think he's got a decent matchup too. Yeah, he's got the Marlins again, I think. And I mean, if you look at Mad Bum, like the numbers, and I mean, I'm not right on a lot of stuff, but 3 or 4 weeks ago, I said, I hope he has another couple rocky starts and people drop him because I'm going to be picking him up and I'm going to be rolling with him. Mad Bum has a 12% swinging strike rate, a 17.4% K minus walk rate. Everything looks a lot better. As usual, with every single guy who's better, his velo's up, right? His velo's up 2 miles per hour from last year. So is he going to be an elite, amazing, incredible guy anymore? I don't think so. But is he going to be a guy that if you play the right matchups, he's going to be useful for you in 15-team leagues? I think absolutely. Yeah. Alzolay is also super interesting to me. I mean, he's generating a really nice swinging strike rate, 14.3%. I know that control had been one of his kind of bugaboos heading into the season, but the control metrics look really, really nice. A 70.4% first pitch strike rate, 43.8% zone rate. So those are all at or above league average. A 34.3% O swing, well above league average. He's generating whiffs in the zone, 79.3% Z contact, much better than league average. K minus walk rate, 21%. He does have a low BABIP, so that whip is going to be impacted there. But he also has a super low strand rate. So those will also probably balance each other out a little bit. So really interested in Alzolay. Richards, the last two outings that Richards has had, you know, I think in a lot of ways, you got to just think like, okay, am I going to believe those first few starts that he had or am I not? And he looks like a different pitcher the last couple. Now, granted, those are good matchups, but guys can be really useful if you just use them based on matchups. And he's generating, they were all supported by very high swinging strike rates. I think it's 13% swinging strike rate or higher over the last 14 days. You know, so he's got a lot going for him as well. He's also got a really strong offense behind him. So there's a lot of reasons to like him as well. And then Carlos Martinez, you know, the metrics don't jump off the page, but he isn't walking guys. He's throwing a lot of strikes. He's not striking guys out, but he's not going to have this low of a K rate. He's not going to have a 13.5% K rate. So I think that he will eventually be at a point where he can be, much more of a contributor. So all of them I like a lot. I think it would probably be Alzolay, Mad Bum, Carmart, and then Richards maybe for me, just because Richards really struggles with his control a lot. But you know, all four of them I think in 15 team leagues are useful.
Yeah, I'm glad you were on the same page with me on Bumgarner, because even going into the season, I said if his velocity's up, he's going to be usable in 15 team leagues. And it started out bad, but the velocity was kind of felt like it was all over the place. He's looked really good his last couple starts, at least kind of more like the guy of old, which is good. So, I'm on board with what we're seeing there with Mad Bum in certain situations, as you mentioned. So I'm there. I'm curious to see on Wednesday how Alzolay does against the Dodgers. Very, very curious there because he's looked great. Dodgers offense is kind of sputtered. It could be an interesting spot to see how that one plays out. A few other guys, we saw Stassi and Astudillo go because catchers are at a premium. Right? Zunino went in a few leagues as well. Kinsner for St. Louis.
Kinsner.
Yeah, you make that one tough for St. Louis since Yadier is out. You got Pavin Smith we talked about before. Wood we talked about last week. Gibson. A lot of these guys we talked about in previous weeks. I told you before the show, I was shocked Josh Staumont was still available in 136 leagues, as he is clearly the guy, at least for now.
Although he did pitch the top of the eighth today for the Royals. So who knows? Maybe they're just doing week by week.
That makes rostering things so much fun. But a lot of these guys we talked about before, some of them were kind of just like two-star guys, Coors Field guys, hit and miss, stuff like that. Anybody else stand out to you as you made some moves this week?
Let's see. Guys that I went after. I mean, a lot of the folks that we talked about were the folks that I added. So those were really the folks that I was going after. So I don't have, I don't have many folks to add. I mean, Cole Irvin is down there and he's pitching another great game this week. So he might be somebody that folks want to look at a little bit. Luis Garcia of the
Astros,
yep. He's pitching again, right? When Odorizzi comes back, he may lose the spot in the rotation, but skills-wise, he's been lights out. Tony Gonsolin,
He's a guy that I added. I added him in a bunch of places as well.
How much did you spend though?
It ranged in leagues from 27 in some OCs to 74 or something like that.
That's reasonable. He went as high as 111, which I guess whatever. But like even Matty Woodens, guys that follow the Dodgers, say he's a little ways away from making an appearance.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's 3 to 4 weeks is what they say.
Yeah,
but if he can give you 4 months, I mean, the thing with Gonsolin is I'm not really worried about him pitching well. You know, like the injury certainly concerns me and being able to be there consistently certainly concerns me. But I'm not really that concerned about him pitching poorly because he has everything that I'd be looking for that isn't really available on the wire. Right. Like a guy who has above league average in every single skill set that you want in a pitcher. Great situation with the Dodgers. You know, they obviously have a huge need now for pitching. So Gonsolin was a guy that I also bid pretty strongly on. One guy who I think is maybe coming around a little bit is Luis Urias.
Mm-hmm. He's starting to swing it good.
He definitely is looking, he's starting to make better contact and some of the plate skills are starting to improve, which I think is really important. And then I know a lot of guys picked him up last week in expectation of his 2-start week this week, but Justin Dunn, he was pitching really well when we started the show and his velocity, he actually has the highest velocity gain of any starting pitcher in baseball right now. He still has a little bit of the control issues, but he's been generating, or I should say in one of his starts, he generated a lot of swinging strikes. He hasn't necessarily done it on a regular basis, but he's been pretty good so far tonight. He's 5 1/3, 3 hits, 3 walks, 6 Ks, 1 earned run against the Orioles. So again, another guy I think is kind of a matchup guy, not necessarily somebody that I'm going to want to hold on to for an extended period of time. But So those are some of the folks that I was targeting.
Last one I want to ask you about here, because we talked about Tyler O'Neill. He went 168 leagues, as high as 217, as low as 1. His teammate returned from the IL about 5 days ago, and that is Harrison Bader. And he went in 91 leagues, as high as 99, as low as 1. Personally, I'd rather have O'Neill than Bader, but where do you stand on that one?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think Bader's got a similar, very low batting average floor, which is tough, although the whole league has a pretty low batting average floor, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just remarkable. Like, what's really fascinating to me is just how many bad BABIPs there are. How many sub-200 BABIPs.
It's a 3-2 outcome world now.
It's absolutely crazy. I'm not as interested in Bader, but again, he's a speed, potentially power guy. One guy that I forgot to mention is that I had been after is Blake Treinen. I went after Blake Treinen pretty hard in some leagues and got him a number of places. He's been, the skills have been off the charts. I've never been a Treinen fan necessarily because he's had that 1 year where he's been amazing, but he's got that new slider. Over his last 5 games, he's a relief pitcher, so we're talking like 5 innings, but his in-zone contact rate is 62.5%. That's the lowest it's been in the last 3 years. His walk rate is 0%. His swinging strike rate is 18.4%. His K rate, his O-swing is 42%, and his K rate is 41%. So he's got a 41% K minus walk rate. He came in after Kenley in one instance last week. Obviously, I still think Kenley's going to be the guy, but if for whatever reason Kenley is not the guy, Treinen is a nice little piece to stash because he could be ridiculous if he keeps up these skills so far this year.
No, it makes total sense. For the reason why everyone loved Corey Knebel, you should love Blake Treinen. Because Knebel's done pretty much, I'd say, close to the year, if not for a long time. Now you got Treinen out there. Kenley's still going to be the guy, but it's like we said then, he's going to save like 70 to 75%. They're not going to run him out there a lot. So Treinen's going to get those chances to come in there and shut things down. Gratterall's even struggling a bit. So it makes a ton of sense to go take a chance on Treinen for many reasons we talked about before. In a similar vein, like I got the Giants game on right now, and Jake McGee, he's he's struggling again. Now, it's not a save situation, so maybe people say that's what it is, but he's giving up hits, giving up runs. He has not been the same guy we saw the first few weeks. He's not the same guy we saw the first few weeks out of the year. So I'm telling you, we talked about it before. Keep an eye on Tyler Rogers if you have room to just stash a guy, because he's been getting more and more higher leverage situations. He's got the occasional ninth inning job when they gave McGee the day off. He's the guy right now, it looks like, if something changes. So you can get him cheap for a little bit longer, but that leash might be shrinking.
He's gone in pretty much all 15
people
teamers.
People started picking him up,
yeah,
okay? Because
yeah.
I've been saying it for about 3 weeks now. Like, it's coming. Everyone, you know, last year I was all aboard, and he kind of got some blow-ups. It wasn't pretty. He looks more like that 2019 Tyler Rogers again. That's just ridiculous. Everything's on the ground or a strikeout. So, if he's available somewhere for you and you have a stash spot, I would look into Tyler Rogers. Just putting that one out there. All right, let's get some listener questions on this one, and we'll head on out of here on a Tuesday. But we got about 5 or 6 listener questions, I believe. Walter McMichael starts out with one. He's got a real question. He's not sarcastic. He's never a sarcastic guy. Never. Ever. At Real Fake Walter says, is Vlad the East Coast Mike Trout?
Walter, I was trying to make it an entire podcast.
I know, that's right. You haven't said it.
I was trying to make an entire podcast without mentioning Vlad Jr., but Walter ruins it for everyone. you know, the reviews of the podcast have been downhill recently on my feed. I think I have like 3 or 4 straight 1-star reviews or 0-star reviews. And I think that's probably because people are just tired of me talking about Vlad Jr. I've lost on Vlad Jr. I mean, the thing about Vlad, I think the most impressive thing for me, the major difference that I see, I mean, there's 2 major differences that I see in Vlad so far this year. Number one is plate discipline. His plate discipline has been elite, right? His O swing, I think, is around 20%, which is huge. I mean, his contact rate's actually down, like if you look at it. That's one thing. And then his exit velocity on line drives and fly balls is one of the tops in the league. And that's always been one of my kind of poo-poos of Vlad Jr. was, you know, he is that his exit velocity on line drives and fly balls wasn't actually, it's never been that good, but it's really good now. And I think we're seeing the results of that. So I missed on Vlad. He's not nearly at Trout's level, but certainly he's starting to show that outside of speed, you know, he will likely be a very elite hitter for a very long time. And the Blue Jays certainly should have never considered trading him. And I don't know what kind of a human being would have suggested that in the offseason.
We all have our flaws. It's all good. Our buddy Breaking Ben _T, Ben Tidd, has a couple questions here. He's got more of a commenter question for Toby, but he'd like to hear Bubba's thoughts. I have 5 NFBC teams, and in 3, I started starting pitcher, a.k.a. pocket aces. And in the other 2, I went outfield starting pitcher, Soto and Betts, then starting pitcher. In the leagues, I went starting pitcher. I'm currently in 1st, 2nd, and 6th. And in the other 2, I'm in last. So the ones he didn't go pocket aces. The calendar just turned to May, but have your teams had similar results so far? The way things are going, I'm convinced that starting pitcher truly is the way to go in 15s.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's way too early to know. And I also think that you shouldn't, I think you need to think about it as a strategy and not necessarily look at your standings to confirm or deny whether it has been successful or not. So like, if you look at my main events, you know, which is kind of sad to do, but we'll do that anyways, because I'm willing to sacrifice for everybody. You know, I went pocket aces in 2 of them. And in those 2, I'm in 8th and I'm in 12th. And then in the ones that I didn't do that, you know, I'm in 10th and I'm in 3rd. And, you know, the reason for that is not because I went pocket aces. It's because in one of those, I drafted Luis Castillo and Lucas Giolito. And in one of them, I drafted Lucas Giolito and Brandon Woodruff. And in the ones that I'm doing better in, I drafted Shane Bieber, you know? And so again, like, don't ascribe that, right? Again, if you were looking at your standings, everybody who drafted Giolito as their ace is probably not doing that hot.
Yeah.
But, you know, he still has 27 starts to go or 26 starts to go for the rest of the season. And so we don't know exactly how that's going to work its way out.
Can you imagine those guys that went Giolito Castillo?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's rough. I have a Giolito Castillo.
Yep, I'm with you. That's why I said it.
No, I think I have a Bieber Castillo. I might have a Giolito Castillo. I do have a Giolito Castillo. So, you know, again, you know, that's just kind of, that's how it works. And so, again, it's a strategy. There are different strategies that allow you to win. There are benefits and things that aren't good about each one of those strategies. And one of the reasons why I employed the strategies that I did, you know, when I was drafting in a certain spot and I liked both of the starting pitchers that were going, then I would go pocket aces. If I didn't like the starting pitchers that were left or that were available, then I would go hitters. Or if I liked the hitter more, like I really liked Manny Machado. And so I have him in a few places, you know, in the late second round. So those are just, I think, some of the examples of, you know, what you can do to, you know, I wouldn't think about it that way, right? Because it's all about the players that you draft that year. If you draft good players, then it's going to look good. If you don't, it doesn't. But one of the things about the two aces is that you do have some insurance if one of them struggles a little bit more. If both of them struggle, well, then I think that's mostly probably just bad luck.
Yeah. And that's the point, like you've talked about forever with pocket aces. It's more of an insurance policy than, like, not saying like if they both hit, you're just way ahead of the game, but it gives you the luxury. If one stumbles or one gets hurt or whatever, because, you know, you still have 26 other picks coming up after that. Like, one reason why Ben might be winning some leagues, he has saves. Like, those have been so hard to find. That has nothing That has nothing to do with the first two picks you made. Like, there's a lot of things. You know, I think he said he went Soto. Well, Soto's been out for half of the first month. Like, what if Soto plays the whole first month? I guarantee you're not in last place. I would be willing to guarantee you're not in last place. Just a hunch. Maybe, but I'd like to think you're not. So there's a lot of, like, avoiding injuries and having saves right now, you'd be winning every league. I'm just going to, it's just pretty much the way it's going to go. It's been a wild April, and we got five more months to go. So have some fun with that. Our buddy Dan McEwen, at Dan the Goat, Mr. Byron Buxton. I'm just going to call him Buxton the Goat McEwen. That's what I'm gonna start calling him, because he's gonna remind us every week about Byron Buxton's bold prediction. But he also has some good questions as well. Anything to be concerned about with Giolito going forward, or just a blip? Also, the guy in your bold predictions pod that said Buxton is the first two rounds next year. I heard a rumor his brilliance knows no bounds. So there's our Buxton comment. But Gio, velocity is a bit concerning to me. The overall control has been a bit concerning. I'm not worried yet, but like, I'm still a definite Gio believer. There is some concerns, and I listen to a lot of podcasts in my truck, and Chris Rose, who was on Intentional Talk, he left, we got fired. He's on John Boy Media. He does a thing called the 6-man rotation, and Gio's one of his guys. And so he rotates through all these professionals, like pro ball players, and Gio's on the show like once every 4 or 5 weeks. And Gio came on the week after the Boston blow up and talked about it. And he says it has nothing to do with the morning, even though I've heard him talk about it. He's on a morning guy on that show. He said it wasn't the morning situation. He feels he was tipping his pitches, and he doesn't want to talk about it on the show. So I think he's working through that mechanical stuff right now, which I think is a big factor. That's, I'm more concerned with that right now than the other stuff. That's me personally.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not really concerned. I mean, if you think about it, like, here are his starts. You know, we went 5 innings, 1 earned run, 8 strikeouts. You know, 6 2/3, 4 earned runs, 7 strikeouts. You know, 1 inning, 0 Ks, 7 earned runs, 10 hits and walks. Then he goes 7 innings. You know, or actually, I'm doing this in reverse order. Sorry, 7 innings, 0 earned runs, 8 strikeouts, 5-3-10, 5-2-8. If you remove the one blow up, you know, he's exactly who we thought he was going to be. The velocity is a little bit concerning, but he's averaging 93.7. At least this is, I'm using Fangraphs velocity just because it's all available to me right here. 93.7 velocity. You know, he was 94.2 in 2020. He was 94.4 in 2019. He was 92.5 in his last bad season. So he's still above a tick there. And he also has his changeup, which is absolutely incredible. Swinging strike rate is still elite. 20 K minus walk rate is 20.9%. He's walking a decent chunk of people, but I think that's all from that one start. Because like his first pitch strike rate is the highest it's ever been. His O swing is the highest it's ever been. His zone percentage is the second highest it's ever been. So I don't think that walk percentage, I mean, it could stay there because that's his career walk percentage, but the skills point towards him being better than that. He's also got a 1.76 K, you know, home runs per nine. You know, and so there's just these small sample size stuff that I think over the course of the season is going to even itself out. If he throws, you know, a shutout, you know, if he throws seven shutout innings, his next outing, his ERA is probably going to be in the high threes, you know, and then we're less concerned. So I'm not really concerned about Gio. What I am concerned about, is the White Sox defense. The White Sox defense in the outfield, and he's a fly ball pitcher, is going to be absolutely atrocious. Speaking of which, a guy who that you should go out and get is Brian Goodwin, I think, in deeper leagues, because he just signed with them. Yeah, I don't want Billy Hamilton. But talk about a 15-15 guy, you know, if he plays every day. Goodwin is that guy. And so so I am very worried about that defensive outfield for Giolito and what that might mean for him. But I still think, you know, we're talking about a real elite guy. And a lot of times pitchers will gain a mile per hour of velocity over the course of a season, just warmer weather and all of that jazz. So I feel pretty good about Gio overall. Even Luis Castillo, you know, I know it does not look good and it's probably the worst stretch of his career, but, you know, Ryan Bloomfield put out a graphic on Twitter the other day, and I think there's an article coming out tomorrow in more depth on Baseball HQ, but it appears that he is smaller sample, but he does appear to be a warm weather pitcher. Well,
it was interesting with that chart he showed, like the velocities, they varied a little, but they're pretty similar, but the walks and all that stuff changes tremendously.
Yeah.
Like it was, I expected the velocities to be kind of different too. And now those were relatively close. Like, but the other results stood out quite a bit.
It's the control, right? It's the command. Yep. I mean,
grip the ball,
that's why he's getting absolutely crushed, right? Yep. I mean, like his BABIP is 400. I'm not super concerned about Gio. I feel good about, I would still draft Gio where I drafted him. Maybe I'd choose Darvish or Burns before that, you know, now. But I still love Gio. I still think he's going to be fine.
And it's like the things you said. I got his game logs up. And before the blow up in Boston, he still gave up two runs and three runs in his first two starts, then a seven shutout. But 8 Ks or more in each start. The walks, he still gave up two walks in two of the three starts. So the walks have always been there, but they've seen more pronounced in his last three starts. And the long ball's been there the last three starts. He's given up five home runs in his last three starts. So that's concerning. But the strikeouts have been back the last two. In his last start, he was a little wild in his 5 1/3 innings, but he still got the Ks. Three walks kind of got him in trouble. But I think he's just working on something now, because he was very, very good to start the season. And then it just kind of got Blackman just walked it off. No, they took McGee. Yeah, they brought Doval in, not Rogers. So that's going to be interesting. But Doval proceeded.
Rogers to pitched like, earlier. Rogers
okay, they proceeded to give up like a two singles and a walk-off homer to Blackman. So, a six-run a seventh for the Rockies to win it. That was fun. But, I'm still good with Gio. I'm not going anywhere. I think there's a lot to like there. I was going to mention the Duvall thing, but I didn't notice Rogers. So that's good to know. I will say, though, while you were talking, I got an alert on my phone. So Alex Kirilloff did not play on Tuesday because of a wrist issue. Now he's going to see a specialist tomorrow because it is worse than people said. That's basically the gist of the tweet from the beat writer. So he's seeing a specialist on his wrist. That is not good at all. That sucks because he was starting to just crush everything in his path. And I was really looking forward to a summer of Alex Kirilloff and that lineup with the boomstick and Buxton, those three guys. Like, that could be just insane, and it might be bad. So keep an eye on that going forward, people. That stinks. Sorry to bring that news to you.
It's the same wrist, I guess, that he injured previously.
Oh, even better. So, yeah, then it's probably something like ligament or nerves or something. So, sweet. Lil Book of Calm has some questions for us real quick. Yeah, two questions. Who are your favorite high-volume relief pitchers with starting pitcher eligibility? Like, who else even that has that role other than Kopech and Whitlock? Whitlock I like, because I've actually added him in some leagues for cheap because I think he can be sneaky as the season goes on. We love Kopech. Anton, like, he's going to be that guy. He doesn't have starting pitcher eligibility, I don't think. But, I didn't think Whitlock did either. I was surprised that he wrote that. He could almost say McClanahan if they don't let him go five innings. So that could be in. But what about you?
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, but even Whitlock, he's not really like a middle.
No, he's a back end of the bullpen guy. I picked him up for when like they trade Matt Barnes or something.
Yeah, so he has. Well, I guess he's averaged 2 innings per outing, but the thing is, they're not throwing him that often. So he's thrown 14 innings with 19 strikeouts, and so yeah, so which is fine, but you know we're in week 5 of the season, so. You divide that by 4, so he's maybe getting you 5 strikeouts per week, depending on how those days line up. Patino, I have not seen how he is. Really nice to add to that list, and could be super valuable if McClanahan like
80 we're losing you quite a bit.
80 pitches. If McClanahan isn't able to get to 80, I think could be incredibly valuable.
Yeah. The other question he says. Should Tauchman get every day at bats even after Yaz is back? We kind of already hit on that. I don't think he will, but he should. So we'll see how that one goes. Dave Petroziello says, on my best team so far, online championship team, I feel like I have a good grasp on all the categories besides steals and was struggling with that before I lost Lou Bob. So that's going to be a struggle. One of the guys I whiffed on so far, McCutcheon. Shocked he's been so bad might be would you be willing to drop McCutcheon? Now, he hit 2 home runs on Tuesday night, which is a bit different, but are you in the drop McCutcheon to improve your roster situation?
Oh, absolutely not. And that was before, she with the Toby, ball changing.
Toby, we're going to have to wrap it up.
You can't bring it up.
No. So we're going to call it there. Technical difficulties kind of guys. We only had one more question. We'll save it for next week. We'll get to that one, but we got most of them for you guys. And we'll see what we can do going forward, but we'll be back with some more fab stuff for you. You can check out Toby on Twitter at BatFlipCrazy. I'm at BDAntrix, this is Bubba and the BatFlip. We'll be back with you next time. Good luck, and we'll see you then.
Better with a home policy from American Family Insurance, because you'll feel protected no matter how the wind blows. Also, you can keep enjoying the home of your dreams. And our expert agents can help you save up to 23% when you bundle home with auto. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit amfam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.